time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. Good morning on this Saturday morning. You know what time it is. We're about to dive into an hour's worth of sports happening here inside of the Mitten State. We're going to do a recap on March Madness and how that ended out. And there are a lot of happy fans here in the state of Michigan. I am one of them, if you can tell by how much energy I have in this intro. And then we'll get into our Pistons, as we always do, the Tigers and the Red Wings, before we get into our picks. This is going to be such a fun episode to dive into because I am excited to talk about the Michigan Wolverines. I'm obviously feeling great after the weekend and early week that happened this week. Lacrosse has gotten started, had our first game earlier this week. It felt good to be back on the sideline. Scoreboard didn't quite go as well as we would have liked, but it was good to be back on the sideline, seeing the boys playing and getting back in that coaching motion. Had another game on Thursday as well. Actually, I'm recording this on Thursday, taking a little time to myself on Friday. So getting way ahead of the board here, but that's A-okay. That just means I get to do what I want sometimes. You know what I'm saying? But either way, this is going to be a fun one. Got a lot going on, and lacrosse is in full swing. And now that we've gotten through the obligatory, it's time to talk about the most exciting news of the weekend. The Final Four went down on both the men's and women's sides of the NCAA tournament. UConn and Illinois took battle first. And, well, this game really came down to who had the better shot and was able to really impose their will throughout the game. And UConn ended up being that team. The Illinois Fighting Illini lose this game 71-62. Keaton Wagler, player of the game for Illinois, 20 points, 7 of 16 from the field, 4 of 5 from the free throw line, 8 rebounds, and he grabbed 2 assists, 3 turnovers in 37 minutes of play. They shoot 34-23-78, 8 turnovers, 44 rebounds, 8%. They led in the game. Their largest lead was just 1. UConn shot 35 from the field, 36 from the three-point line, 88 from the free throw line, 4 turnovers, 37 rebounds, 88%. They led in this game, and their largest lead was 14. Terrace Reed, 17 points, 11 rebounds, 6 of 12, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. And then Silas Demery Jr., 7 assists, 1 turnover, 31 minutes of play. Illinois had a fantastic season. I mean, they were fourth in the Big Ten. They played well, and I mean, they made it all the way to the Final Four before finally being ousted. And they had multiple chances within this game to be able to come out with the victory. So it wasn't like it was just easy pickings, and UConn had no struggles in this game, and they ran away with it, and Illinois had no business being there. Illinois showed on multiple accounts why they deserved to be in that game, and they just couldn't quite finish it. And that's okay. You know, they had a fantastic season, made the Big Ten absolutely proud. It looks like one of the best, if not the best, conference in the NCAA this year on the men's side, and maybe even the women's side too, as they went on to win over there, which we'll talk about in just a second here. But yeah, so Illinois, great season, but you fell at the hands of UConn, who handled business just the way they know how. They move on to take on the winner of Michigan and Arizona. And a lot of Michigan fans were happy about this. Ade Mara had himself a day. 11 of 16, 4-4 from the free throw line for 26 points, 9 rebounds. Elliot Cadeau, 10 assists, 6 turnovers, 33 minutes of play. 48-44, 81 in the splits, 13 turnovers, 40 rebounds. Led for 99% of the game, largest lead being 30 at one point. Arizona, really just no match. Koa Pete, 16 points, 6 of 18 from the field, 3 of 3 from the free throw line, 11 rebounds. And then Braden Burries had 1 assist, 1 turnover, 38 minutes of play. Both their guards got into foul trouble, which made this game very hard for them. They were not able to get going. Jaden Bradley and Braden Burries had a very tough time against this defense. 37-35, 68 in their splits, 14 turnovers, 44 rebounds. They did not lead at all in this game. Michigan was absolutely dominant in this game. Literally looked like the best team in the country and looked like they were going to steamroll their way into a national championship. And as we all know, steamrolls don't happen too often in a national championship. This was the fourth game in a row that they had scored 90 points. That is a lot of points in a college basketball game. They did it four games in a row for the state tournament. And that is why this thing is so crazy, is how good Michigan had been. And everybody assumed that that would continue on into the championship game. So many people felt like maybe UConn wouldn't be able to pull out an upset or it wouldn't even be close. And, well, I mean, they were kind of right, but they kind of weren't. The championship game was a very good game, but not so good game. I mean, the offense on both sides, atrocious. But Michigan wins this game by 6, 69-63. Alex Caraban, 17 points, 5 of 14 from the field, 4 of 6 from the free throw line. Terrace Reed, 14 rebounds. Malachi Smith, 3 assists, 1 turnover in 20 minutes of play. UConn shoots 31-27-75 in their splits. 11 turnovers, 46 rebounds, 15%. They led in this game by 3 was their largest lead. On the other side, Michigan, Elliott Cadeau, 19 points, 5 of 11 from the field, 8 of 9 from the free throw line, 2 assists, 1 turnover, 30 minutes of play. Merez Johnson, 10 rebounds. Michigan shoots 38, 13, and 89 in their splits. 13% Michigan shot from the 3-point line. 2 of 15 in this game. 10 turnovers, 39 rebounds, led for 75% of the game, largest lead being 11. And they only shot 13% from the 3-point line. Shows how versatile this Michigan team truly was and how they were literally the best team in the country. They only lost 3 games this entire season. Only one of them was by double digits. The other two by single digits. One by 3, the other by 4 or 5. And then you had they were all by single digits, excuse me. The loss to Purdue in the Big Ten tournament was only by 8. So that's a total of 16 to 17 points that they lost by the entire year. This Michigan team was unbelievable. And I'm just glad that I'm able to say that they were national champions and that I am a fan of a team that won a national championship during my lifetime. That is what you absolutely love to see. Meanwhile, on the women's side of things, it was UConn and South Carolina on one side, and on the other side, UCLA and Texas. It was all chalk, all ones across the board. South Carolina handled UConn with basically no concerns. Taniya Latson, 16 points, 3 of 10 from the field, 10 of 10 from the free throw line, 11 rebounds in this game for her as well, 3 assists, 0 turnovers, 16 minutes of play. They shoot 38, 33, 82 from their splits, 15 turnovers, 47 rebounds, led for 63% of the game, 15 being their largest lead. Meanwhile, for UConn, Sarah Strong, 12 points and 12 rebounds, 4 of 16 from the field, 2 of 4 from the free throw line. Ozzie Fudd, 5 assists, 2 turnovers, 39 minutes of play. They shoot 31, 29, 67 in their splits, 10 turnovers, 32 rebounds, led for 25% of the game, their largest lead being 7. South Carolina moves on again to try and win another national championship. Coach Dawn Staley continuing to prove why she's one of the best in the game, and it almost does not get better than her. I absolutely love Dawn Staley, but I'm telling you, she is a beast of a coach. She cares about her players. She knows the game of basketball, and she knows how to get them motivated. And she's continuing to get not only into the tournament, but back to the Final Four, back to the championship game over and over. She's going to be a Hall of Famer, and it is stamped, and it is well-deserved and proven. I don't even want to hear anybody say anything other than that, even though we're about to talk about something that does not make her look oh so good. On the other side, UCLA and Texas absolutely duked it out in the semifinal. Kyla Oatacre, 11 points, 7 rebounds, 5 of 10 from the field, 1 of 4 from the free throw line. Rory Harmon, 5 assists, 2 turnovers, 38 minutes of play. Texas shoots 31, 22, 40 in their splits, 12 turnovers, 36 rebounds, led for 2% of the game by 2. Was their largest lead. Meanwhile, Lauren Betts, 16 points and 11 rebounds, 7 of 10 from the field, 2 for 2 from the free throw line. and Charlize Ledger Walker, 4 assists, 4 turnovers, 29 minutes of play. 41-31, 92 in their splits, 23 turnovers, 37 rebounds, led for 94% of the game, their largest lead being 13 as UCLA wins this game. 51-44 was an absolute haymakers going back and forth in this brawl, heavyweight battle that UCLA was able to come out on top of. They were 36-1 at the end of this game, and proving once again that they're one of the best teams in the country, and that if you're going to want to beat them, you have to come with absolutely everything you have, because they're going to give it their all the entire time. They squeeze this one out against UCLA to set up for another emphatic matchup with South Carolina in the championship game that everybody surely was looking forward to, right? It surely was going to be the best game of the season, right? Wrong. UCLA wins this game by almost 30. Gabriela Yaquez, 21 points, 8 of 14 from the field, 3 of 3 from the free throw line. Lauren Betts, 11 rebounds. Jaquez also had 5 assists, 1 turnover, 34 minutes of play. UCLA shoots 43-42, 85 in their splits, 13 turnovers, 49 rebounds, led by 35 was their largest lead for 98% of the game they led. Meanwhile, South Carolina on the other side, Tessa Johnson, 14 points, 6 of 12 from the field, 2 for 2 from the free throw line. Joyce Edwards, 11 rebounds, and she also had 3 assists, 2 turnovers, 30 minutes of play. They shoot 29-13, 76 in their splits, 14 turnovers, 37 rebounds. They did not lead at all in this game. UCLA was up 21-10 after just one quarter. And then at halftime, South Carolina only mustered a score 23 points. UCLA held a 13-point lead. It was 36-23 at half. And then that's when they took off a 25-9 quarter in the third quarter, really extended things for UCLA. And then South Carolina wins the fourth quarter 19-18, but it simply just wasn't enough. And UCLA runs away with a 79-51 victory to give them the national championship. So the Big Ten has a chance to do something miraculous this year. They won the college football national championship with Indiana. They won the NCAA men's D1 basketball national championship with Michigan. They won the women's D1 national basketball championship with UCLA. They won the wrestling championship with Penn State on the men's side in Division One. Now they have a chance to win men's hockey Division One with Michigan or even Wisconsin. Two opportunities for them there over in the Frozen Four as well. So the Big Ten has been absolutely dominating sports since NIL and transfer portal has been opened. I mean, now that everybody can't do it behind closed doors, these schools up here in the North look mighty fine, if you ask me, including Michigan. I mean, Michigan State has to catch up a little bit. Definitely had to throw a jab in there. I mean, Ohio State has even done their part, I guess. I hate even giving them props. Illinois coming up in the game. Indiana looks fantastic. The Big Ten is absolutely rolling. And when it comes across the country in all sports, so it would be amazing to see them win out in the Frozen Four, specifically Michigan, because that would make me ecstatic to see them both win a championship in the same year. It would be the first for the hockey team since 1998. So I'll be keeping my eyes on that as well. But once again, another congratulations to the Michigan Wolverines and all the fans of the Wolverines out there. A national championship to celebrate as they took down UConn 69-63. That's going to wrap up our NCAA coverage for the year. We'll be back in the fall to talk football, but when we get back from the break, we'll be talking about our Pistons here with Mid Madness on 95.3. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we are back to talk about our Detroit Pistons inside of Little Caesars Arena. They are getting ready to make their playoff push. They have solidified not only first in the Central Division, but they are first in the entire Eastern Conference. I'm pretty sure that is going to be where they will stand at the end of the season, as there is only a couple more games left. In fact, The Z means they have clinched the conference, which is what they have next to their name. They are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference as they hold a 3.5 game lead over the Boston Celtics. The Celtics, Knicks, and Cavaliers are all in the playoffs already. The Hawks and Raptors still fighting to solidify their spot alongside the Magic, 76ers, Hornets, and the Heat are solidified in the play-in bracket, while the Bucks, Bulls, Nets, Pacers, and Wizards are all eliminated from the playoffs. The Pistons are 58-22, Celtics 54-25, Knicks 51-28, Cavaliers 51-29. I would imagine that the Celtics are the only ones that could catch the Pistons at this point. They are 3.5 games back, but even they can't do that because the Pistons have clinched the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Now, for those teams like the Hawks, who are 45-35, and then the Raptors are 44-35. The Hawks are a half game above the Raptors. They are fighting for 5th, 6th, and 7th place with the Magic, who are 44-16. They're a half game behind the Raptors for those last two playoff spots. Right now, they belong to the Hawks and Raptors. Magic sitting at 7. 76ers, 43-36. Hornets, 43-37, are 8-9 in that play-in bracket at the moment. Over on the East, the Thunder have the league's best record and number one seed in the Western Conference. They're 64-16. The Spurs have clinched their division. The Lakers have clinched their division. And then the Nuggets, Rockets, and Timberwolves are all in the playoffs, locked in out west. The Suns, the Clippers, the Trailblazers, and the Warriors are locked into the play-in bracket. Meanwhile, the Pelicans, Grizzlies, Mavericks, Kings, and Jazz have all been eliminated from playoff contention. So that leaves the Pistons in great shape to go out and possibly make a run for a NBA championship. Cade Cunningham, 24.4, shooting 46.2% from the field, 9.9 assists per game, just 3.7 turnovers in 34.2 minutes of play. Jalen Duren, 19.5 points, shooting 64.9 from the field with 10.6 rebounds and 28.3 minutes of play. Asar Thompson, 2 steals, 1.5 turnovers, 26 minutes of play. Isaiah Stewart, 1.6 blocks, 0.3 steals, 5 rebounds per game. Pistons score 117.6 points per game, grab 45.5 rebounds, and assist on 27.7 buckets per game. Looking at what happened since the last time we had a conversation, they did beat the 76ers later that night, 116-93, getting 19 from Tobias Harris playing against his former squad. Duren grabbed 7 rebounds. Jenkins had a team-high 14 assists. And then they went down on the road to play Orlando, and Orlando got the best of them. 123-107, Jalen Duren leading the squad, 18 points and 9 rebounds. Jenkins had 7 assists. Meanwhile, against Milwaukee, 137-111, Duren had 21-9. Cade Cunningham puts in 10. Pistons win yet another one. That one was the one that I believe clinched the Eastern Conference first seed for them, as only 2 more games are in their season. As I'm recording this on Thursday, they're going to play Charlotte last night as you guys are listening to this. They're giving Charlotte a 53.6% chance, just 46.4% for the Pistons, I would imagine, because they believe the Pistons are going to start to rest players. Pistons have already won the season series, as it's a 3-game series. They won the first two, 112-86 back on December 20th, and then 110-104 back on February 9th. And this will be game 3 against Brandon Miller, Musa Diabate, Lonzo Ball, or LaMelo Ball and company. And Charlotte, I don't really think it matters what happens in these remaining 2 games, although I'm going to take a closer look at their game on Sunday, as none of us know what's going to happen in that game just yet. 12.1% chance for Indiana, 87.9% chance for the Pistons, even if the Pistons were to sit guys. I mean, Indiana's facing a lot of injury. They're 2-3 in their last 5. They have wins over Miami and Chicago, but they lost to Charlotte, Cleveland, and Minnesota. Meanwhile, Pistons in their last 5, wins over Toronto, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, loss to Orlando, 4-1. Obviously, Tyrese Haliburton out for the season with that Achilles. TJ McConnell also out. Pascal Siakam out. Andrew Nembhard also out. So kind of regardless of who plays for the Pistons, they should go out and have a ton of success in that game. There should be no concerns for them whatsoever coming out of that game. They should at the very least be 59-23 at the end of the season. They may miraculously even be 60-22. And what, I mean, fantastic fashion. The Pistons so far have already clinched the season series against the Pacers. They're trying to go for a sweep, and they may even play a few starters for a few minutes to try and guarantee that sweep as they lead a series 3-0, 127-112 back on November 17th, 122-117 on November 24th, and then 121-78 on January 17th. And now they're going to play game four here on Sunday, wrapping up the regular season for the Pistons. They'll get a chance to rest. They won't play until, I believe, Thursday is their first game of the playoffs. Going to try and see if we can take a look at that here and see when they're going to play, as they'll be awaiting the play-in tournament and how that will factor out. No, they will not play until Friday at the earliest, maybe even Saturday. So we'll find out in due time who their opponent will be when they head into the playoffs. And then we'll also find out, you know, what kind of matchup that's going to be like for them. And I imagine they're going to have some success, because they most likely had success against that team in the regular season series. Taking a closer look at this loss to the Magic while we have a little bit of time here. 123-107, Paolo Banchero goes 10 of 16 from the field, 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Jalen Suggs, 6 rebounds and 12 assists, just one turnover, 34 minutes of play. The Magic shoot 51-42-75 in their splits, 15 turnovers, 35 rebounds. They led for 96% of the game, their largest lead being 26. Meanwhile, the Pistons, 49-33-68 in the splits, 21 turnovers, 35 rebounds. They led for 1% of the game, their largest lead being 1 in the Kia Center on the road. So basically a complete domination by the Magic, 30-28 after the first, 39-27 in the second quarter. So a big boost there for the Magic, and then 29-21 in the third quarter before the Pistons tried to score him back. They win the fourth quarter 31-25, but honestly nowhere near enough. So the season series between the Magic tied at 2-2, 135-116 to the Pistons back on October 29th, 112-109 to the Magic on November 28th, 106-92 to the Pistons on March 1st, and then 123-107 in this most recent game on April 6th. As Orlando is still, like I said earlier, fighting to try and solidify themselves in the playoffs versus having to get in the play-in and then play even more games than they would like to play in the playoffs anyway. But they went out and they handled business in that game. Then the Pistons bounced back the very next night in Cade Cunningham's return against the Milwaukee Bucks, and he dished out 10 assists, 3 turnovers, and 26 minutes of play, almost as if he was never out. Jalen Duren, 21 points, 9 rebounds, 8 of 9 from the field, 5 of 7 from the free throw line. Pistons, 57-47, 90 in their splits, 12 turnovers, 46 rebounds, 91%. They led 91% of the game, their largest lead being 31. And meanwhile, for the Bucks, they had Ryan Rollins, 23 points, 8 of 19 from the field, 6 of 6 from the free throw line. Jericho Sims, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, 2 turnovers, 39 minutes of play, 42% from the field, 34 from three, 79 from the free throw line, 16 turnovers, 32 rebounds, led for 7% of the game, their largest lead being just 5. And the Pistons fans got a chance to enjoy that one for real, because they decided to bring Cade Cunningham back in his return in a home game at Little Caesars Arena. He had 13-10 in helping the Pistons beat the Bucks. So the Pistons win this season series 3-1. 129-116 back on November 22nd, 113-109 on December 3rd, 113-109 was Milwaukee on December 3rd, 124-112 to the Pistons on December 6th, and then 137-111 just now on the 8th in favor of our Pistons. And then that last game that they played last week was against the 76ers. 76ers were pacing well earlier in the year. They've recently dealt with some injuries, and that's really affected them. Pistons win 116-93. Tobias Harris, 19, 7 of 13 from the field, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds for Duren. Danis Jenkins, 14 assists, 1 turnover, 49-39, 79 in the splits, 12 turnovers, 45 rebounds, led for 93% of the game, largest lead 26. 76ers, Maxey, 8 of 17 from the field, 5 of 7 for 23 points from the free throw line, 5 of 7 from the free throw line, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 turnovers for Paul George in 28 minutes of play, 44-28, 79 in the splits, 15 turnovers, 33 rebounds, led for 2% of the game, largest lead being 2. Pistons win this season series 4-0 in a sweep, 111-108 on November 9th, 114-105 on November 14th, 131-109 on March 12th, and then 116-93 on the 4th. That's all we got for our Pistons coverage right now. They're obviously going to be resting a little bit here over the next couple of days and then getting ready to see who they'll be playing in the playoffs. By the time we talk again next week, we'll know who they'll be playing in the playoffs, and then we'll be able to dive into that and find out if our Pistons are going to be able to make any kind of run in the playoffs and maybe even bring Detroit another championship, which the state of Michigan would be ecstatic for. But we got to talk about their roommates, the Red Wings and the Tigers, in our next segment when we're back with more Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket.
Carter Ostrous here for the Council for Responsible Energy. I want to share a few quick, simple, and inexpensive tips that will not only reduce your home's energy use, but will also save you money on your utility bills. As you switch from heating to cooling, why not opt for a new programmable thermostat that will virtually pay for itself? This is one of the easiest things you can do to really see some significant savings. You can save about $180 a year by properly setting a programmable thermostat. Weather stripping can also significantly lower your bills. You just peel the backing off and seal up any leaks in drafty doors and windows. It only takes a few minutes, but you definitely notice a difference in both the temperature in the house and also your bills. And my last tip, check your home's insulation. Proper insulation in your attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, exterior and basement walls can save you 30% on home energy bills. It's a little bit more work for you, but your wallet will definitely thank you.
A message from the Council for Responsible Energy.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. It's time for us to talk about the Red Wings in Little Caesars Arena after we laid down some ice. It's been quite the time for them over the last couple of weeks, and it's not one that's going to make a lot of Red Wings fans happy. They've fallen to 40, 29, and 9 for 89 points, and I believe that has them on the outside looking in, and I don't know if they're going to be able to catch up. Looking at the wild card, they are now behind the Blue Jackets, who are behind the Senators. So the Red Wings have pretty much spoiled their playoff chances. If they are going to get in, they're going to have to win their remaining games and win them all. And I don't even know if that's going to be enough. Looking at the leaders, Alex DeBrincat, 39 goals, 14 on the power play, 276 shots. He also leads the team in points with 43 assists at 82 on the year for total points. 48 assists for Lucas Raymond leads the team, plus minus 5 power play assists. He has 19. John Gibson still leads the team. He has a 2.63 goals against average, .904 save percentage. Has seen 1,399 shots, saved 1,265 of them, has given up 134 goals. He has 28 wins on the year. Team gives up 2.9 goals, or scores 2.9 goals per game, gives up 3 goals, tied for 13th. Their power play, 22.4%, tied for 12th. Penalty kill, 77.2%, tied for 23rd. So that is where a lot of the issues are coming in for the Red Wings, just not really able to get it going, especially in the latter half of this season. Since we last talked, they lost to New York 4-1. They lost to Minnesota 5-4, and then lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets 4-3 in a shootout. Coming up, they have 4 games remaining. They have Philadelphia on Thursday night, so technically 3 games, because you guys already know the factor of that. They have New Jersey later today, and then they have Tampa Bay on Monday and Florida on Wednesday. Tampa Bay and Florida both on the road to end out the season. They have New Jersey at home, but they're on an uphill battle. None of the teams that they're playing are right directly in front of them, so a loss doesn't affect them. But they do need those teams in front of them to lose, and the Red Wings have to win. So they haven't completely squandered their chances at the playoffs, but they're slim, and they're very, very slim. There's no guarantee that they are going to make it. You know what I'm saying? So that's my piece here is the Red Wings have to win every single game they have left, and they have to hope that either the Blue Jackets or the Senators lose a couple of games, and they're able to squeeze up ahead of them and get into the wild card and steal a spot away. But if I'm being honest, I don't feel comfortable that the Red Wings are going to be able to do that. They haven't shown that they're going to be able to win games in a consistent fashion in quite some time. They haven't shown that they can close out games. They haven't shown that they can't commit penalties and stay out of the box. They haven't shown that they want to play playoff hockey and be in the playoffs. So, no, I don't think that they're going to go out and win the last four games of their season. I don't think that somebody else in front of them is going to lose a couple games and they're going to be able to squeeze in. I think that they're going to win maybe two of them, lose two of them, and then they're going to be looking on the outside in and going, well, we didn't do everything we needed to do to find ourselves in a successful position. So how were we supposed to have success this year and go into the playoffs after we squandered it? They were doing great before the All-Star and Olympic break. Came back after that, done. Terrible. And they haven't been able to really pick up any traction since then. And there goes the season. Tanked immediately. And they find themselves on the outside of the playoffs once again. Not saying that that's what happened already. But, I mean, the proof is in the pudding and the paint is on the wall. Like, it's almost time, and we're going to find out here pretty soon. But we'll touch in next week with the Red Wings and see if they're able to pull off a miraculous feat that's going to be able to help them into the playoffs. But I don't feel great about it. Meanwhile, the Tigers, they have a rocky start to the season. They're at the bottom of the AL Central right now at 4-9. At the top, the Guardians 8-5. Twins are 7-6. Royals 5-7. White Sox 4-8. Tigers are four games behind the Guardians. As I mentioned, it's been a rough season for them to start. Leading the team in batting average, Colt Keith with a .351 has an on-base percentage of .395 and a slugging percentage of .500. Kerry Carpenter has two homers on the year, seven RBIs, .206 in his batting average. Dylan Dingler, eight RBIs to lead the team. He's got two home runs, batting average .273. Meanwhile, Tarek Skubal, 2.55 in the earned in the ERA department, leading the team with one win, 16 strikeouts, leads the team in all three of those departments. Meanwhile, the team has 53 runs, tied for 14th in the league, a batting average of .239, tied for 12th, an on-base percentage of .330, best for 8th. And then slugging percentage of .361 at 19th. On the pitching side, the 4.40 ERA is good for 22nd. Quality starts of 5, tied for 5th. 1.42 in the whip at 23rd. And their opponent batting average at .241, good for 18th in the league. Quite a few games already being played in this early season. They just got out of a 4-game series since we last talked against the Twins, but we got to first start with St. Louis Cardinals. They beat the Cardinals 4-0 in game one, beat them 11-6 in game two, and then lost in game three 5-3, and then they went in a 4-game series against the Twins where they got swept 7-3, 4-2, 8-6, 3-1 by the hands of the Twins on the road. It's a very tough way to lose four games in a row and start your season behind the eight ball after climbing yourself back up to just below 500. So now their upcoming series will be against the Marlins, which I won't talk a ton about because I'll be talking about that in our pick section here in just a moment. But they'll Montero, Mize, and Skubal on the mound for those three. Then the Royals will come to town. Miami's coming to town as well to Comerica Park. Valdez, Flaherty, and Montero on the mound for those Kansas City games. And then Boston on the road over the weekend. Mize and Skubal have been announced. Battle against Suarez and Bello. So we'll see who's going to pitch in those next two games. Though that's also a 4-game series on the road against the Red Sox. So an uphill battle for the Tigers at the start of the season. And I for sure they're going to be getting a lot of people's best after the season that they had last year and the way that they almost, you know, were able to get into the World Series. They almost made it to the ALCS, and they almost made it to the World Series, which is one of those places where you're ecstatic, and you know that you're starting to build the right team and put the pieces together to have a ton of success behind the back of Tarek Skubal, who, once again, is going to have another great year. You can tell by the early start he's having, although it's a little bit slower than the start he had last year, he's still in a position where he's going to have a fantastic season this year, and I'm really in a position to be super excited about what we're going to see from him over the season, as he's bound to try and go for a third Cy Young. I think that's huge when you're talking about a guy like him who can go out and have an uber amount of success. But that's all we got for the Tigers and the Red Wings. When we come back, we'll be talking about our picks here with Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. And well, after last week, I'm feeling great about the picks. And don't forget that you can play along with picks at any moment that you would like using the chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app. Just listen to the picks that we select here and then listen to me talk and babble about the deliberation and all the good things I know and all the knowledge I have and how I know ball. And I'm just glamorous. And then you can do all of your own deliberation, research, and dive into your own picks, submit them, and see if you know ball better than I do. Still looking for somebody to beat me. It's yet to be done. Not saying I know ball, but also not saying I don't know ball. It's up to you to prove to me that I don't. But after last weekend, maybe I kind of don't. I went 3-3 last week. Illinois, the Spurs, and the Battlehawks let me down, but the Storm Defenders and the University of Michigan made me very proud, improving me to 29-19 on this current rendition of picks. So now we're going into a new week of picks. We're going to be talking about, of course, more UFL, as that is off and running. We've got an MLB series, the Tiger series. We're going to dive into a UFC fight and the Red Wings as well. So where do we pick up? Right where we left off last week with football. The Gamblers going up against the Defenders. The Defenders coming up with a huge victory last week to improve themselves to 1-1. Houston, after last week, I believe, drops to 1-1. Or no, they improved themselves to 1-1 as well, as they picked up a win over the Stallions 22-20. So Houston sitting at 1-1, has scored 39 points, given up 56, negative 17 on that score differential. Meanwhile, the Defenders, 54-42, plus 12 in their score differential, although they are only 1-1. They're coming off an impressive victory, a lopsided victory at that, as they took down the Aviators 44-26. So no real concerns from them there. A lot of positive motion going for them, and they're probably feeling great and have a lot of adrenaline going in that locker room. So if you think I'm going to go against the Defenders for us after getting them to win in such gratifying fashion, you're crazy. I think the Gamblers are starting to put some things together for them as somewhat of a newer franchise, but the Defenders have been around for a little bit. They know how this thing works. And after getting that win last week, that first win and the monkey off the back, they're going to take off. They're going to run with it. And I have to go with the Defenders in this matchup this week as well. So that moves us on to our next UFL game of the week, which is the Aviators and the Renegades. When you look at the standings here, the Renegades off to a 2-0 start. 67 points for 32 against, a plus 35 score differential, looking to run away with the league. Meanwhile, the Aviators still searching for their first win of the year. 42 points, 67 points they've given up, so the negative 25. But, I mean, they've put up 42 points. That's better than some other teams in the league. And they have an offense going, but their defense just isn't really able to stop anybody. And that's been a real concern for them as they're pressing forward in the beginning part of this season. So I'm not sure I'm going to be able to count on them to go out and have success to stop the Renegades. But, I mean, eventually the Renegades have to lose, right? And would it be against a team like the Aviators, who maybe they're overlooking a little bit? Is this somewhat of a trap game? I'm not sure who they have coming up next. But my point is, you know, when you start to get in a groove and playing so well, and then you come across a team that has had a lot of struggle, you start to think, well, they ain't going to beat us. You know, look at who they lost to. Look at who we beat. And I think we're going to be just fine here. We just have to go out and handle business, do this and do that. And then you go out there and you don't handle business and you don't do this and do that. And it turns into a serious issue. So I think that could possibly be something that happens to the Renegades. But I don't think it happens this week. I said all of that just to say I'll be taking the Renegades this week because when you start 2-0 and you put up 67 points in 2 weeks, and you only give up 32, a lot is going right for you on both sides of the ball, and it's very hard to go against that. So I'm not going to be a dummy and try and do that. So I'm taking the Renegades, and our last game of the week is the Birmingham Stallions against the St. Louis Battlehawks. And I'm a little conflicted in this one. They're both 1-1. The Battlehawks, 31 points for, 41 points against, negative 10 score differential. The Stallions locked in at 35 apiece, zero on their score differential. I went with the Battlehawks last week. I kind of want to go with the Battlehawks again this week, but the Battlehawks let me down last week. They couldn't really get anything going. Their offense was stifled. They only put up 15 points last week, and then they ended up coming out with a loss that I didn't think they would take, dropping them to 1-1. And it looks like, you know, those years of their dominance might be in question after the way that Dallas and Orlando have started the season. On the other hand, for the Stallions, they're kind of just a middle-of-the-pack team, as you see, 35 points for, 35 against, zero score differential, 1-1. Like, everything is very vanilla, very average across the board. I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel about that, but after the Battlehawks let me down last week, I guess I have to go with consistency. The Stallions are doing the same thing week in and week out. I guess I got to rock with that. I'll take the Stallions to beat the Battlehawks this week, although I do not feel comfortable about it 1 second at all. So, yeah, whatever you got to say about that, maybe this is one of those weeks where you can catch up to me and gain a little bit of ground in those picks. Meanwhile, that's going to switch things over. We're going to head into the Octagon first. Jiří Procházka will be taking on Carlos Oberg. Procházka is 6'3", 206 pounds, 33 years old, 80 inches is his reach. Orthodox fighting stance. He lands 57.38% of his significant strikes at 5.69 per match. Oberg, on the other side, who is 14-1, 6'4", 205 pounds, 35 years old, 77 inches on the reach. Orthodox fighter as well. Lands 6.54 matches or significant strikes. And 56.05 is his accuracy on those. Procházka is 32-5-1. For the most part, I would say that age is something that is a negative factor in the ring, but sometimes it really helps you out, the experience that you have. And it's on the other side here for Oberg. He doesn't quite have the experience. He's still fresh in the UFC fighting game, just 14-1 in his professional career. This bout will be CBS Paramount Plus. The main card starts at 9 p.m. Later tonight. So enjoy this one from the Kasaya Center in Miami. But I think Oberg has a little bit of advantage here, still being fresh to the game and still new. But that also creates somewhat of an advantage for Procházka, who has been around the Octagon for quite some time. And maybe is going to be able to use some of that experience to his advantage. But either way, I'm leaning Oberg. There's something about, his lack of experience, air quotes there, that screams out at me that he has a legitimate chance. And then he matches up great in the size department against Procházka as well in this light heavyweight fight. So I like this bout, and I think it's going to be an exciting one, but I got to go with Oberg to come out with this one. And now we're going to head on over to the NHL, laying down some ice. We're going to talk about our Red Wings and give them a chance to maybe come out with a win. They're going to be taking on the Devils later today, 5 p.m. The game cast for this isn't looking amazing. For the Red Wings, the Devils are 40-35-3, 20-19-0 on the road. Red Wings 20-15-4 at home. They don't need any overtime losses. They already lost to the Devils earlier this year, 4-3. They did beat them 3-0 last month. So this is a chance for them to win this season series and maybe try and get on a little bit of a roll here, starting in Little Caesars Arena against the Devils. I don't know how confident all of you out there are, but I'm not very confident at all. So I'm not even going to think about taking the Red Wings in this game whatsoever. I am absolutely going to be rolling with the Devils. It hurts me to not be a homer here as a Red Wings fan. I want to have confidence in them. I want to say they're going to be able to go out and win this game, but I don't whatsoever at all. I'm going to have to roll with the Devils and see if they have any success this weekend, and maybe that'll keep me on a good winning streak here in my picks, because I think that's a little bit more important than the Red Wings trying to make the playoffs at this moment, because it don't really look like they're going to make it there. But that gets us into our last picks of the weekend. It's going to be the season series against the Marlins for the Tigers. It is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, so you guys already know how last night went as I'm talking to you on Thursday. That was Chris Paddock against Keiter Montero. 41.9% chance for the Marlins, 58.1% chance for the Tigers. 8.5 on the over-under in this game. -156 on the money line for the Tigers, +129 for the Marlins. The Marlins are 8-5 to start the year. They have split a series with Cincinnati and a win over the Yankees in their last five. And then obviously the Tigers are 0-5 in their last five. Not on a good win streak for our Tigers, losing five in a row here. Tigers are 2-1 at home, so maybe they're going to be able to get back in the winning column here. But I'm going to take a look and, you know, what else is happening for them this weekend. Jansen Junk against Casey Mize, 49.3% chance for the Marlins, 50.7% for the Tigers. Mize's ERA sitting at 5.23 at the moment, so that's going to be an area of concern for the weekend. And then the last game of the weekend, Sandy Alcantara against Tarik Skubal, 34.1% chance for the Marlins, 65.9% chance for our Tigers. Alcantara's ERA just 0.74. He's 2-0 on the year. Skubal sitting at 2.55. I want to say I trust our bats, but I'm not 100% sure. This is honestly a extremely hard series to listen to, or a series to pick for me, because I want to be a little bit of a homer and say that they're going to have more success at home, as the Marlins have struggled on the road. But nothing about this Piston or this Tigers team is screaming out at me is going to have success. So I'm going to have to roll with the Marlins here as well. So I'm going against both of the Detroit teams this week, although I do not feel confident about doing that at all. But based off what they've shown me, I don't feel confident going with them either. So I just got to go with the lesser of the two evils, I guess, which is picking against them, because I'll feel better about them winning if I pick against them than if I were to pick them and they were to lose. So that's my theory behind all of that. My picks this week: the Stallions over the Battlehawks, the Defenders over the Gamblers, Oberg over Prochaska, Devils over the Red Wings, Marlins over the Tigers, and Renegades over the Aviators. That is what I've got going for the weekend. We have tons of Tigers action getting played here on 95.3 The Ticket. Make sure you are tuned in, as that is some of the best action you're going to get around. We will be back next week. Of course, we will be talking more Pistons, Tigers, Red Wings, and whatever else is happening inside of the state of Michigan when it comes down to the sports. With more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.